This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. When prospective parents consider the possibility of adopting a child, they'll think about what advantages they can offer that child: a loving home, a stable home, economic and educational advantages the child might not otherwise have. But as the years go on and that child grows up, there can be pitfalls and problems that no one could have foreseen. And if that child is of a different race and ethnic background than the adoptive parents, the pitfalls might be especially challenging. Like many adoptive parents in Michigan, Mary Coral and her husband Ken opened their hearts and their home to three children, children they adopted from overseas, specifically from Vietnam, from India, and then from Korea. As the children grew, there were good times, and then came times of frustration and fear as the children became angry, confused, making some downright dangerous choices. Mary Coral tells her family's story in her memoir, The Year the Trees Didn't Die. Mary, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you.
You and your husband met and married when you were young, and then his academic career brought him here to Ann Arbor.
Yes, it did.
And here you are. It's the 70s, and you and Ken decide you want to adopt a child from Vietnam. Why?
Well, in the first place, at that time, to adopt within the country was almost impossible. We went to Catholic Social Services and were told we'd have to wait 4 or 5 years. And then in the second place, circumstances are interesting. We had a friend in the apartment complex we were living in who was Asian American, an MD, who was going to Vietnam to volunteer, like with Doctors Without Borders. And she said she'd see what kids were available there. Well, she wasn't the one who got us the child, but that was the route we followed then.
And there was actually the story of your oldest child's adoption actually contains a terrible plane crash.
Yes, the baby lift crash.
Remind us about that.
The baby lift crash happened as Saigon was falling in April of 75, and it generated considerable controversy. A group of the orphanage workers, our group included, felt that the kids were going to be endangered as the North Vietnamese entered into Saigon. Rightly or wrongly, that's what they felt. So they pleaded with then-President Ford to do something about it. And he did. He got this plane. And they piled the kids on there. And we would never do that now. I mean, there were kids in boxes on the floor, whatever.
But they were desperate times.
There were desperate times, and the plane took off and crashed and landed in a rice paddy, and most of those babies died.
And your baby was supposed to be on that.
Our baby was supposed to be there.
But miraculously, circumstances prevented that. So you get a call. Wait, you do have a baby. And tell us about meeting your little son at Detroit Metropolitan Airport.
I can't believe we did this, to tell you the truth. I mean, we knew like less than 48 hours before we were going to get him. We knew nothing about him except that he had 2 upper and 2 lower teeth. So we go to the airport with the baby seat, and I think we also had a bottle of soy milk because I thought that that's what he might drink. No camera. I mean, we were like stunned. And we got into the airport and we waited and we waited. And finally, the plane comes in and he's carried off the plane by an escort. Her name was Dusty. She was a flight attendant and had the name printed on her uniform. And she just handed him over to us. She didn't even say, oh, congratulations or anything. It was like,
here,
I have this box for you. And we sat down and looked at him and thought, okay, nothing's going to be the same.
and it wasn't. And you really didn't know anything about him and what he'd been through.
Not a thing.
Were there adjustment issues at the beginning?
He was the most easygoing of all our kids. And I think it's because, Cynthia, when he left Vietnam, he was a very sick kid. So he spent like almost 2 months in a hospital in San Francisco before we got him. He wasn't supposed to live. So I think he adjusted to different faces, different routines. I mean, certainly there were adjustments. I mean, yes. He cried and we held him, but he did not have the trauma of the other two.
And you then decided to adopt another child. You opened your lives to a little girl from India who had actually been cared for by Mother Teresa and her nuns.
That's true.
And you just felt the need to have more children?
Yeah, I think that's true. We felt the need to have more children. We weren't going to get another child from Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And we had friends from India. That seemed to be our pattern of connection. So we had friends who kept sort of saying, oh, come on, come on, come on. So we did. We contacted somebody who had connections with Mother Teresa. And that's how our daughter came. She was two, though. She was
a toddler.
She was
and
a toddler.
So your oldest Min was about three, and then comes this toddler. And you did have some very, very difficult early months with her. With
oh, my
Anita.
Gosh. I don't know how we did it.
How so?
Well, I have this section in the book where I write about the Japanese author Kenzaburi Oe. I don't know if I'm saying his last name correctly, mm-hmm. who writes the book called A Personal Matter. And he details the story of his son who was born with major birth defects and how he would vacillate between not wanting that child and really wanting that child to be okay. And he finally concludes, almost at the end of the book when he comes to terms with how things are, that forbearance is the thing that got him through. And I realize now in looking back that we had no clue that this child might never talk. She
was months,
so
wasn't it?
Traumatized. She would not say a word. She would just sit there and cry silent tears. And then she would wake up at night and she would have what are called night terrors. So you'd try to reach out to her and say, here, here, we're here. But she couldn't even see you. She couldn't even see you. So you just went with it until the day that she finally started coming out.
The iceberg began to thaw.
Yeah, she sat on the floor in the room that she slept in with her brother, mm-hmm. and she sang this little Indian song that the nuns must have taught her. Mm. And that was the beginning.
And how long before you decided, all right, we're going back in and we're going to give it a third try?
I'm an impulsive person. So it was a while, and we really had struggled with our daughter. And I think my husband was, well, don't you think you want to just leave it go at this? You know,
yeah,
we finally got through
as a
this
reader,
hard time.
I got to say, I wondered the same thing as I read your book. Why? You were in a happy place. The kids had kind of gelled. You were a family unit that was working.
Mm-hmm.
And then?
Well, I have a blog that's titled, I Am My Mother's Daughter. Mm-hmm. My mom always was a kid lover. And I did love being a parent to those kids. I was ecstatic most of the time. I mean, not to say that I wasn't lonely or frustrated or grouchy
at
times.
Any mother has.
I was.
Yeah.
But I thought, well, let's try and see what happens.
Your youngest comes from Korea at what age?
He was two.
Again, enough to have had experiences that you had no idea what he'd gone through.
We didn't, except that we knew he was what's now called a failure to thrive baby. Hmm. So his milestone markers were way behind. And the famous note we got that was the only bit of information we had about him, except what he was eating and whether or not he, you know, was toilet trained, which he wasn't at two. That was fine. But there was this little note that said, fusses much will be much better off in nice adoptive family. That should have been a clue.
Mm-hmm. But by then he was in your home. And it struck me that as you're building your family, there was this theme of people who would say hurtful things, things that highlighted the differences in your children, such as?
Which one do you want? the one that I...
Which one sticks in your heart the most?
Maybe three of them. The one where the kid on the bike comes over the Broadway Bridge and accuses me of being a baby stealer. Because there was a lot of talk at the time about whether or not it really was right for people of another race to adopt the non-similar child. Mm. That was really hard for me. And I have a long section there where I reflect on whether or not it was right. I've concluded, heck, it is right. Mm-hmm. Kids deserve a home. The other one I think is also in the book. The kids and I are on the bus, and we're getting off the bus, and this guy sort of looks at me and says, "How many people did you sleep with?"
Wow.
And I could only pray that the kids didn't understand what he was saying.
That's tough. I am talking with Ann Arbor writer Mary Correll. Her memoir is The Year the Trees Didn't Die, telling the story of her interracial adoptive family and the three children that she and her husband Ken adopted from Vietnam, India, and Korea, starting in the mid-1970s. Things got to a point where they seemed happy and peaceful. The kids were young. There was a sense of being together as a family. And then the teen years hit and things take a dramatic and honestly scary turn. I wonder if you'd read us an excerpt from your book. And this was, in retrospect, the first warning sign you had that very, very big trouble lay ahead.
Yes, of course. Both Min and Anita were not what educators call school compliant. They wanted the social life of school, not the subjects. Still, things seemed manageable. So the Thursday I remember happened before we were seriously worried, maybe just a bit uncertain, knowing that we were headed into the teen years. Anita and Min came home from school and stood inside the back door. Min's coat was ripped and his lip was bleeding. Anita had no coat. She cried that she'd dropped it somewhere on Barton Drive. They had run from kids chasing after them. I pieced the story together. There were a bunch of white kids who snatched their backpacks, shoved them, taunted them. The taunts had been going on for months. Kids called them names, banana and Oreo, chink, gook. Only words, no actual physical assault. They ignored the words. Isn't that what we parents preached back then? Don't engage. Ignore taunts, and the taunts will eventually stop. But they hadn't stopped. On the Thursday, they stood messed up inside the back door. Men had taunted in return. Honky, honky. Then there was physical stuff, and my kids lost the fight. Anita went to her room. Min sat on the couch and looked at the place on the floor where they had drawn outlines of themselves with markers one early morning while I slept. I taped up his scrapes. "Oh, Min," he shrugged, a minute lifting of his shoulders meant to convey coping, to suggest it was what it was. I went in search of Anita's things, found them, and knocked on her bedroom door. "I found your pack in the bushes. I got your coat, too." "I hate India," she yelled from behind the door. "I hate my birth mother. I hate adoption. I hate this family. I hate everybody." "These kids are not the whole world, honey." But Anita flamed up and out, like she was covered in oil and someone had lit the torch. "I hate the whole world," she shrieked, loud, loud, loud. "Hate it, hate it, hate it." And that's the time I remember when I go back and try to figure why we began to lose the good story. It was only some bullying. Lots of kids get bullied. Everyone has to learn how to stand up to it. "Bullies aren't," I told the kids, "the whole world." Still, that day is what I remember. The day my world began to change.
That's Mary Correll reading from her memoir, The Year the Trees Didn't Die. And you go on in very, very frank detail of the troubles your children went through. Anita took up with very dangerous, abusive men. And you take us to those terrifying nights. Min, your oldest, had his share of problems and spent a night in the courtesy of the Ann Arbor police in jail. You had to come and get him. Sung had a lot of emotional episodes where he would instantly become furious and angry to the point of screaming and shouting. And he certainly had difficulties in school. Many parents can relate to that. But looking back, how much of this do you feel this was because of these children being adopted and being from a completely different ethnicity than you and your husband versus teenage troubles?
That's a really good question, because people tended to say to me, all teens have trouble. Mm-hmm. And that's true, whether they're in birth families or families made by adoption. Teens do have trouble. But I truly do think Cynthia, mm-hmm. that the layers of difference in ethnicity and adjustment to the fact that they felt that they could never quite be all Vietnamese or all American was a big factor in how difficult the times were for them.
So what lessons are you hoping to share with your readers, perhaps people who are considering adopting, or, you know, things that maybe you wish you had done or done differently?
Well, I think it is easier now and that there is much more knowledge. I'm still in an adoptive parent group where we talk mm-hmm. about our adult children. But I think the one thing I would like to share, whether they're families of adoption or biology, is a connection. I'd like people to know they're not alone. And I'd like people to believe in some part of themselves that it might not be perfect. It won't be perfect. There are no guarantees, as those adoption workers kept telling mm-hmm. us. But perhaps by continuing to love, you can make a place.
Finally, I'm interested in, first, how are the kids doing today?
They're great.
So you've emerged from those stormy years.
Mm-hmm.
How do they feel about you writing their stories in this book?
Well, I talked to them. I gave them the manuscript. I told them that I would cut anything they didn't want me to say. I felt I really, really needed to do that. But they're very supportive. My oldest son does a lot of publicity work for me. My daughter sent me a text this morning saying good luck. My youngest son believes I should seek out Oprah.
So they're supportive.
It's okay. They're very supportive.
And we should let people know you did protect their privacy to the point where you gave them different names for this book. Well, it was a very compelling read. I'm an adoptee, and it certainly gave me a sense, too, of the kinds of efforts that the adoptive parent goes through to kind of build a family. I found it a very, very powerful read, Mary. The book is titled The Year the Trees Didn't Die, One Mother's Memoir. Mary Coral of Ann Arbor, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you for asking me to.